C1PR. Number 6B.
Question. Do we desire to change? Do we desire to come down from the horses and be humble enough and accept God as He is? Because God is determined in Himself, He isn't going to change. That's the wonderful sense of soul, that God is determined in Himself, that God is not moved by something outside. Therefore, God is not moved by our likes and dislikes. If we praise Him or if we disgust Him, that doesn't move, neither nor. God is only what He is. And what has to be changed is our mentality. So we come to the fourth subtone, where it is shown that the desire must be to come into harmony with the science of being. It says prayer cannot change the science of being. You have again that unchangeable deity. Here presented as the science of being. We have the tone of principle. See, it's a science of being which is unchangeable. Therefore, the only thing we can do is first to be humble, and by being humble, we are brought into harmony with the science of being. If we are not humble, we put up a barrier between principle and me. Being humble, being willing to accept God as He is, brings me nearer and nearer and nearer and nearer to this God until I'm correlated, synchronized with the harmony of being. Goodness attains the demonstration of truth. A request that God will save us is not all that is required. See, she puts those two into balance. A request that God will save us, and on the other side, goodness. She says that goodness, a request that God will save us will not save us. But goodness attains the demonstration of good. It is what we put into it. The mere habit of pleading with the divine mind as one pleads with a human being perpetuates the belief in God as humanly circumscribed, an error which impedes spiritual growth. So she shows here, what shall our desire be? Well, the moment it has grown to the third subtone, where our desire is humble, and we say, all right, I put myself, my personal self aside, we have opened the way to be one with God, to get into harmony with God. And so, with our desires, to come into into oneness with God. Then she goes on to life. Here she says, I have captioned it for myself like this, that the desire must be to draw nearer and nearer to the source of all existence. Well, that's a wonderful tone here. It shows in principle, up to principle, it has shown the conditions which enable us to be brought into harmony with God. Coming into harmony with God, we cannot help that this principle is going to demonstrate itself as life, truth, and love. It cannot help demonstrating itself that it draws us nearer and nearer to the source of all existence, of all blessedness. That's the beauty of it, that the moment we come to the oneness with principle, that we take part, we become partakers. And so often when she comes to life, she speaks about the partakers. Become partaker of all that principle has in store, namely life, truth, and love. So here she begins and says, God is love. I think the accent is on is and not on love. God is love. Can we ask Him to be more? God is intelligence. Can we inform the infinite mind of anything He does not already comprehend? Well, what she does here is nothing else than to sum up that second scriptural note and says, your father knows what need ye have. But here she comes and says, this very fact that God knows what need ye have is an isness, is a fact, is a fact of existence. It isn't something up in the air. It isn't something which may come about. She said, this is an isness. And she starts writing and says, well, this wonderful fact that love knows what you have need of, and that love will supply what you have need of, because love is mind and is wisdom, and he knows the best what is the first step for you to take. But this very fact is an isness. It's a fact of being. Therefore, she goes on and says, do we expect to change perfection? We can't change isness, really. Shall we plead for more at the open fount, which is pouring forth more than we accept? The unspoken desire does bring us nearer the source of all existence and blessedness. You see, again we have the absolute and the way to it, the goal and the way. The goal, that wonderful isness, which says, God is. What does that mean? It means that he is what he is, and he is all. Therefore, he is always pouring forth all good and all blessedness. That we cannot change. Can we change perfection? We can't change perfection. Yes, you have read that. I have read that. I have read that, I don't know, many times. But really, the beauty of it is enormous the moment one takes the second step of pondering, of worshipping that, of taking that in into our heart. I bet, I don't know what I could bet, that if we take this subject into our heart and carry it around for 2 weeks, take 2 weeks for each subject and carry it around. If you go to the business, if you go into the garden, if you are in the kitchen, carry it around. After all, we can carry it around. It can be always staying with us, and just always we can feel it a little bit, hear a little bit, and then a little bit. And then it can talk to us a little bit. But think of this wonderful subject of mind as life, which says, what do I desire really? I know my false sort of desire is this. That is, as I desire that God is going to be love to me. That God is going to know what I need. And I really hope he will know what I need. And I'm longing to hope that God will supply it to me. Well, this is a theological, brutal prayer. It is full of ignorance. It is not a scientific prayer. It's stupid prayer. God is what he is. What are we going to ask him to be what he is? We never ask a dog to be a dog. But we always go and ask God to be God. We would never dream to ask God to be doggish. But we always go and ask God to be divine and godlike. Here she says, but please open your thought to it and say, God is love. He's pouring forth. He is doing it. He is the source of all existence. He is pouring forth more than we accept. So why are you going to pray at all? You don't have to beg and implore anything. What have we to do? She says, well, you know, the unspoken desire, that desire which does not formulate wishes. It's unspoken, undefined, humanly undefined, open, still virgin in its desire to receive and to conceive. That which is constantly pouring forth to us more than we expect and than we can figure out. The unspoken desire does bring us nearer the source of all existence and blessedness. The moment we have that unspoken desire, where we don't formulate to God Almighty a wish and say, please give me this, and please put this in order, please put that in order. Well, God doesn't hear such a thing. God only hears His own nature. We can only approach God through His own nature. And so here we can only approach life through living, through the open thought, through the wide open thought which says, my word, it's true. There is constantly pouring forth more than we accept. Well, we know it theoretically. We know theoretically that life is the living principle. That this principle is constantly reducing the infinite to a system which is working and working in every detail. It's working in every detail of our life. But we put a barrier to this stream of righteousness because we search something else. We don't desire God as He is. And therefore, we don't take part and are no partakers of His blessing. Now, if we could walk around and silently, unspeakably carry with us, just as a mother can carry her child with her wherever she goes, that's a wonderful thing. A mother, when she's pregnant, she goes around. She crosses the street. The first thing she thinks about is the child. I must be careful not to get into danger, my child. Whatever she does, if she bends, if she's there, she says, will it hurt my child? It's always, will it hurt my child? Will it could be for my child? It's always that wonderful sense of loving and loving what one already has. Even in its infancy, even in its embryo. Well, we have the vision in its embryo. We have it. We have studied life as mind and life as mind. We have studied the world from the point of view of mind. We have it in its infancy. The question here is, are we going in that unspoken desire along day by day and open our womb to receive the blessing there is? Or are we going to shut our womb, make it tight and little and narrow because we want this and that and this and that and this and that and this and that? Here she says, no, if you go to the root, you have to treat. If you go to the root, to the divine mind, to God as He is, you have life, the source of all existence. And so, right afterwards, she comes to truth, the subtle truth, says, oh yes, and then your true desire is really to acknowledge God as immutable light. It's that wonderful attitude where we not always think, well, this time God didn't work. It didn't work for me. Now this time my prayer didn't work. Why didn't it work? Why do we say it didn't work? Why do we judge what is a right demonstration and a false demonstration? What is it? Our narrow little judgment. Here she says, no, no, you don't need to fear anything. If you go the way of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, you can be as sure as 2 and 2 equal 4 that what comes out of that is right, is immutable right, and He will do right without being reminded of Him, without giving Him advice, without any human advice and judgment. How often do we say to something, well, it didn't work out right, I didn't make my demonstration? Who says so? Who says so? Human mind is not able to judge that, what is right and what is wrong. We can only have one sense what if something is right or not, is if we have gone through the first 5, through the source of all existence. If we have done that, then we don't have to worry. Because she's out of the source of all existence comes the content of life, and that is truth. That is what is true. And that is what she says is immutably true. Immutably true means that it is true in the whole big plan which God has for us. And not in that narrow little way which we think, but for the present moment it would have been right if it had worked out like this. And we have that narrow sense of how things should be right now for me. Losing our wide vision of mind which says, take God as He is in His allness, and then you see that this little happening is just one little point in the whole plan. And how often have we said after 20 years, that experience was the best thing that ever could happen. But at that time, I thought it was a catastrophe. How often have we said that? We judged wrong. And we were depressing ourselves and said, I don't understand anything about God. I haven't made my demonstration. How often do we hear that thing? I haven't made my demonstration. Well, I don't know. Nobody knows if he has made his demonstration. Except one thing we know, that he has made a right demonstration if he has gone the way of life, of the world, of mind, spirit, soul, principle, and life. If that is fulfilled, truth springs into focus. You can't help it. And springs into focus how? Immutably right. Not presently right. Not just right for the moment. For the big life. For our eternity. For our salvation right. It's much bigger than we think. And so that's why she comes right afterwards to the sense of love and says, well, God's work is done. God's work is done. The rule is established. Well, what rule is established? You only have read 2 pages, and she has never talked about the rule. What rule is established? And she says, you have only to avail yourself of God's rule. Well, what rule? She never defined what the rule of God is, has she? Yes and no. She has not defined it verbally, but she has defined it spiritually. She has defined, if you go through these nice steps, and if you follow one after the other, you fulfill God's rule. You fulfill God's rule which says, start with mind, with the willingness to accept God as He is, with the willingness to let your thoughts and desires be molded and molded and molded until they are exalted. How can you do that? He comes to the subtone of spirit and says, you can do that by directing your desire towards God. Hungering, thirsting after righteousness. Then your desire is directed right. To what goal? She comes to soul and says, to that God which is immutable, which is unchanging, which doesn't change, which is firmly, unchangingly established. Therefore, your desire must be hungering after that God, and you can only hunger after that God if you let your ego go. And unself-love, humble, firm petition, that can't help but bring you into harmony with the signs of being. That's a law which we have found time and time again, that the moment we touch soul, we get into oneness with principle. Into harmony with principle. If we are getting into harmony with principle, what are we getting? She says, well, you get nearer and nearer to life, to the source of all existence. To the source of what? Of all existence. Not of a little bit of existence. Not a little bit of something what? Says, of all. Therefore, she says, therefore, don't restrict your desire, don't limit your desire, don't make it small and tight. Open wide your thought to the wholeness. Then, the wider you open it, the more certain you can be that God is doing the right thing with you, whatever the circumstances then may be, whatever it may look like. It may look like fine. It may look like a terrific blow. But it's always the best thing, because God in the seventh stone is love. And it always works out the rule of perfection. But she says, all right, that's your rule. Use it. Use it. go the way. And it's so lovely to see that she says, shall we ask the divine principle of all goodness to do his own work? His work is done. What sort of work has love done? I ask myself. What is the work God has done? Is it that he has given me this and that in human life? That he has fed me? That he has given me an income, a healthy body, and so on? No. No. That's not what God's work is done. God does not know anything about my income, nor anything about my body. He only fulfills his rule. He only fulfills something within himself. He fulfills principle. That's why he says, we cannot ask the divine principle of all goodness to do his work. His work is done. We will see that time and time again. The more we consider this textbook from the point of view of science, that it is always God interpreting himself only through his own nature, never through a foreign nature, always through his own nature, only through his laws and his order and his rule and his system and his method. To what? Only to himself, never to body, never to error, never to a car, never to my boss, never to my surroundings. Always to himself. And that's so nice. He says his work is done. And we have only to avail ourselves of God's rule in order to receive his blessing. And then comes again the third movement, which enables us to work out our own salvation. Then comes the benefactions. But first is, can we work out God's rule? She says, yes, we have to work out God's rule. And in order to receive his blessings. His blessings are not my income, my healthy body, my friendships, my surroundings, my this, my that. My blessings are that I know something about the Word of God. That I have a deeper sense of the Word of God. That's my blessing. And then she says, and this which enables us to work out our own salvation. Then it is brought right down to the human understanding. But this order cannot be evaded. We can, as we will see, we cannot apply deity to something outside of deity. That's all wrong. We can never apply 2 and 2 equal 4, 2 bananas and 2 keepers. We can't. Mathematics is not connected with bananas and the banana farm. It's not. We can only apply mathematics to mathematics. And a real, good, deep thinking mathematics, he usually can't count what 2 pairs of stockings and that and this counts together when he goes for shopping. He's just not interested in that. But he is interested in science, in mathematics. And that mathematics is working out deeper mathematics. And deeper mathematics. But that naturally can be symbolized with bananas, and can be symbolized with kippers, and can be symbolized in any way we want. And the symbols must adjust themselves rightly to the science. But the rule of God is within its own realm of science. Well, that brings me to the end of this first. Well, what does it say? Let me go through it with one respect. And on the Saturday of our next meeting, a whole hour again on this first subject. But I will go over it with the sense that you know its substance, that you know what's in it, that something has already grown into your mind. And then we just can play on these terms. I want to go through them from different angles. I will see how deep preaching. They are for our attitude of prayer. Here, what I want to leave you with is just that sense of bigness. Seems that this first chapter is the prayer for bigness. It's the prayer which says, open up your thought for bigness. And it stands against the prayer for little things. It's in ordinary prayer, in common prayer, in theological prayer, it is always that we think that we must give something to the infinite. That we must give something first to the infinite, either information or enlightenment or advices, etc. Well, therefore, in ordinary prayer we think that through some means we can change God's behavior. That through some means we can change God's behavior. We think that God, the greater, can be influenced by us. That he can be made our servant. That he is going to serve our desires and our wishes. That God becomes the servant and is subservient to our wishes. Now how stupid this is, when one reasons logically. The scientific prayer is quite different. The scientific prayer comes along and says, no, you can't do this. It's the prayer which says, you must take God as he is. What is he? He is presented as the all and infinite. Therefore, every prayer which is not directed to the all and the infinite is not the scientific prayer. So all our littleness, narrowness, and finiteness, our egoistic sense in prayer, has no touch of scientific prayer, and therefore doesn't start with the right desire. Therefore it cannot be answered. So what a difference it would mean for us if we could go around for 2 weeks and just say and ponder that first subject and say, all right, I have to leave my old landmarks, my old sense of prayer. What is my new sense of prayer? Wonderful. I can long and desire the infinite, to get hold of the infinite. And not one iota less, the all of it, the signs of it, the allness of the signs of it. And as we do that and carry that around, something wonderfully satisfactory comes into our heart. But I know the serpent. The serpent comes along and says, well, that's all right, my dear boy, that's all right, but at home I have a very urgent need. There is a problem which needs urgently to be solved. When that is solved, all right, I'm quite prepared to do my job and begin to search God as he is. Well, how on earth are we going to meet that immediate need? On what basis do we want to meet it? Because every trouble, if it's a big trouble, a small trouble, an immediate trouble or not an immediate trouble, is only a manifestation of a wrong basis, of a wrong mental basis. We can't cope with the effect unless we cope with the basis. Well, if the basis is right, the effect is right. Well, how on earth can we cope with an immediate need unless we go back to the basis? And the basis here said, the basis is infinite. And we come back to the same thought. To the prayer of mind which said, take God in its infiniteness and see its value and its infinite value and the valuelessness, the non-value of all the others. So the solution of any problem, if immediate or not immediate, is always in the mental.
Prayer is mental. And so the thing which needs to be handled is the basis, the mental basis. So what else can we do better, even if we have an immediate urgent need, than to start with the prayer of mind? To say, all right, let me first get the proper basis, the basis of the allness and illness of mind. And let me open our thought once to the allness of mind, and that takes my thought away from the littleness of problem. And thought is taken away. Thought is changed from one side to the other. And our whole love goes to God, and our whole love goes now to the other side, and to the other side, and it grows, and it grows, and grows, until it is gathered into the barn. Well, here it stops.